Good morning and welcome to the How You Do Anything is How You Do Everything year-long retreat. Good morning, Ashwini.
Hey, Chris. Good morning. And good afternoon to everyone who's joining us for lunch.
From those far-flung places. All right, so our assignment from yesterday was, when do you presently experience guilt? How old do you feel? Record and listen.
All right,
here's our first caller. First caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, good morning, Chris. Hi, Ashwini. It's Todd.
Hey, Todd.
Hey.
Hi, Todd.
Yeah. So when do you experience guilt?
When I looked at that, it looked like when I would go unconscious and be unskillful, and then get an attempted beating at the unskillfulness. And it would really attack a pretty young person, almost kind of preteen, 10, 11, 12-ish. Like, you should know better. You should know better is what came up.
Yeah. It's sort of always the result of a self-hating message.
Right.
And it's a blame, because what self-hate does is to make it your fault, right? That you've had some kind of impact on another person, and therefore it's your fault, and you should feel bad, and that feeling bad is really that experience of guilt.
Exactly, yeah. That feeling of guilt. And when I was recording about it, I just saw really the kind of the insidiousness of it, that it really, really directs that feeling bad at a young person who, in my experience, when I was quite young, I didn't have a lot of, well, maybe we don't now as older people too, but I didn't really have a lot of, you know, social skills or life skills to really draw. I really was kind of vulnerable, and so the system would attack that vulnerability, it seems.
Yes, and that's such an important point for us to get, regardless of what age we are, right, Todd, that we're not allowed to just have our experience and use the world as a place of curiosity to learn and to be supported in the process of acquiring the skill. It's such an automatic verdict of non-performance, right? And you're unskillful, and what's wrong with you, and look at what you've done, rather than, oh, you didn't know how to do that? Here, let me show you how. Or, yeah, that's an interesting way it went. You know, what you can learn from that is, and, you know, move on from there.
Yes, and when you're saying that, what I saw was I was receiving a lot of external messages at that age time from parents and authority figures of saying, you know, like, A, you should have known better, and B, what's wrong with you? Like, they questioned my own existence, and I have to look at going, yeah, what is wrong with me? Why am I doing these actions that are causing these consequences? There must be really something wrong if people are asking me, what is wrong with you?
Go ahead, Todd. You're breaking up a little bit. So I heard you say that you heard a bunch of external messages asking you about why you did that or what's wrong with you for having done that. And because we get those messages, we internalize them because we have no other way of making sense of it, right? My sense of self is just being created, and it's created around those messages that we get externally.
Yes.
So if I'm being yelled at and I'm being told that there's something wrong with me, then what other conclusion can I have other than I did something wrong and therefore there is something wrong with me? And I should feel bad and wander around in this experience of guilt, which gets triggered whenever that unskillful behavior or that external input is interpreted as there's something wrong with you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It was a great exercise. I got to see a lot of facets and layers to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that that is sort of the basis of our practice, right? That to undo that identification with
right.
the me that is the subject of self-hate or the self that's so hated, and mm-hmm. really step back and go, that's not what I am. That's wow. really the illusion of a self,
right?
Right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Well, great. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Todd.
Thanks, Ashwini. Thank you, Chris.
Thanks, Todd. Ashwini, I was struck by the way Todd started us off with that there's someone who's really, really young, and they're expected to be skillful almost at a grown-up kind of level. And so
yes.
It's guaranteed to go in that direction if that's the case. If that's who we're going to put on stage center, then conditioning mm-hmm. is going to take advantage of that.
Yes, well, and the unexamined belief there is that there is an expectation.
Yeah. Yeah, that the yeah. as you say, the messages have already been internalized, and so there that
yeah.
is, right? There is that expectation to handle it skillfully, but no, as usual, no instructions given on what that might be.
Yeah. Yeah, it's such a setup and such a cruel one at that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mm. All right. Well, let's hear from our next caller. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hi, it's Karen.
Hey, Karen.
Hey. Hi, Chris. Hi, Ashwini. Let's see. I was looking at this one, and the language changed a little bit of, like, how do I experience guilt? That's what I and what I saw is that it always comes in the form of a story from the past, and it's always something that gets evaluated, and the way the information comes is never kind. It,
mm-hmm.
You know, it always it feels like it has the intent to make me feel bad. So it's so different from looking at something from life that
mm-hmm.
Like life. Providing information that maybe something was unskillful, but the way the information is received, it feels kind and true and clean. But the guilt
mm-hmm.
thing is more goes into a story that really is just intent on making me feel bad, and also makes it all about Karen and never about the other, you know, like, I don't know, like maybe if I feel bad about something I said to somebody, it never includes them. It's all about Karen. You
uh-huh,
know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
It's
yes.
a strange, you know, I guess a lot of these things are. It's just a very sort of self-centered, that's what I saw, self-centered emotion or,
yes.
or feeling.
Yeah. Well, what I hear you say, Karen, is two things. One, in looking at the process, you were able to clearly identify the how of guilt. There is a story. It's always a conversation. It's usually about something that happened in the past, and it's pointing to a behavior or something that you did that was wrong and therefore that you should feel bad about. And when that story, when the attention's on the story, you have an experience, a sensation, or whatever you might want to call it, that we label guilt. And so that's the how. And it's so important to see that guilt is is a label that we attach to a sensation related to a story delivered by a voice in the head that's saying you did something wrong at some point in your life, right? When we put it that way, that it's so easy to, I mean, it's so liberating because we can see it for what it is rather than just feel bad.
Yes. Yeah.
And the second thing you said, which was also interesting, is how it's a little bit what we were talking about with Todd, is the way it focuses the attention on the ego. And because I might be unconsciously identified with that, I feel as if I've done something wrong. And so it's a fabulous process by which me is maintained, right? The me that something is wrong with.
There's that, and I'm actually now it's just dropping in all the ways that it could be in the, things in the future too, like maybe I say no to something I think, you know, and then the story goes, well, you should have, or, you know, or you're not very nice, or blah, you know, whatever that is, but it's all the same process. It comes with the story. It's intended to make me feel bad. It makes it all about me. You know, and then just the distinction between that and how life drops in information that might be helpful. It might be very similar information, but it's delivered in a different way that doesn't lead to the
guilt. Yes.
So,
and that feels important too, that there's a distinction between, so there's a way in which we could say that everything is perfect and that's simply the way it is and that's true, but we're always receiving information on how to grow or how to change or how to be different. And that intelligence, recognizing that information is such a different process than the voice in the head telling you you did something bad, because that's only meant to negate you, whereas that life offering of information is so positively given. There's nothing wrong with you, and here's something for you to consider. And that feels like such a different place.
Yes. Yeah. It's like I remember sort of learning this around gossip, you know, working in an office and, you know, and then and over seeing how there might be some gossip. Somebody says a comment and maybe I jump in on that comment, or it could even be about politics. It could be about anything. And then feeling how that didn't feel really good. And life might say, you know, it might come in as information that doesn't feel good when I, you know, I'm going to somehow next time not engage in that. I'm going to be really paying attention and watching this. And this isn't just, it's just not how I want to be in life. Whereas, the guilt would come in with, we shouldn't have, and blah, you know, kind of browbeating sort of stance.
Yeah.
So anyway,
an invitation versus a judgment.
Yes. An invitation, and also an invitation that it's like a learning process and it takes practice. Mm-hmm. And maybe I'm going to have to see that a number of times before it's something that I can. You know, something that I can walk that path and stay out of those, you know. Anyway, it was just, it was really fun to look at, and I appreciate the opportunity. So thank you.
Thank you, Karen.
Yeah.
Thanks, Karen. Sure, you can't beat that. Something that's fun to look at. Something that's intended to head towards suffering, and we're kind of transforming it into something that's fun to look at. So.
Yeah. Because it's so corrosive. It just it just kills the joy of everything.
Yeah, for sure. And I really appreciate the way that you laid that out. There's the label guilt. And then below that and supporting that label are the body sensations and the story. And really we're intended to just hear that label or any kind of insinuation of that label and go right to feeling bad. And as you and Karen were exploring, it seems like there's other worlds that can be explored in that with the body sensations and the story and can have fun with it in that way.
Look to see what's really there for us to take away from the experience and move on rather than live in that beating of, oh my God, what did you do and why did you do that
and
what's wrong with you about doing that and how much pain. And it's always based on, you know, both with Todd and Karen, there's such a level of sincerity and willingness and caring and good intent that whatever that action was, an innocence almost, that the whatever we do comes from, and that gets translated into perhaps something unskillful, who knows, because that's a label also, and then or that's information that we receive from life or external sources, but the what gets crushed in the process of the voice of self-hate is our ability to stay in touch with the intent. You know, the intent is condemned also, not just the action.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is what we really get to see, that the person becomes the target and the skill is no longer the focus of the attention. Because we could always learn a skill, but if we wander condemned as a human being for lack of skill, that's really pernicious. It so undercuts our ability to be here and be open to receiving life's information.
Yeah, exactly. And if we are labeled, if the intention that we have is labeled bad or unskillful, then where does that leave us, right, in terms of having an intention in the future, that any time we have an intention, it might just shortcut the whole skillful, unskillful, and go right to guilt, just make our world smaller and smaller.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing was that chances are, with that good intention, that we were in a conversation with conditioned mind to start, and so it really does come back full circle to conditioning is doing it all.
That's true.
All right, well, let's hear from our next caller. Next caller, you're now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, it's Esther from the Netherlands. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear, Esther.
Hi, Esther.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, good. I got my laptop out because the last time I tried, nobody heard me, so I did something wrong with the app, I think. But anyway. Okay, my heart's pounding like crazy. I am just recommitting. Oh, I'm getting all teary.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I've just realized. I'm sort of still hanging on the exercise of the other day with respect to fear that I presently experience with respect to fear. And when I was recording about that, I did go into detail because I still have this belief that I don't understand what process is. So I was talking about it, and what I came to realize is that my fear for travel, whether it's on my bicycle or in the car or the train, it's pretty big, and I don't know if this is part of the exercise, but I came to the realization that it has everything to do with my son's accident, which is now nearly 5 years ago, which I cannot believe, he was killed in that accident. And I have to go past that road every time I go anywhere, whether it's on my bicycle or the car, or if I go to the train station, I have to go past that too. And it was like, I don't know how to say it, it just hit me so big that that is just, you know, I was going to say still here.
Yeah, it is. It is here, right, Esther? Because it that experience of it, of whatever it is the result of listening to a conversation now, right?
Yeah.
Because that fear is created by whatever it is that the messages are in the moment. Every time, whether it's grief or loss or whatever it is that is being told to you as you get on a bike or get into the car or go down that road, right? You're being bombarded with all of that information about whatever it is.
Yeah.
And so to recognize that it's here is to recognize that there's the conversation or the process of fear is still operating, right? And that's what we mean by process, which is if you look at what causes me to be afraid, on a content level, you know, there's a traumatic experience that you had, mm-hmm. and you're reliving that trauma through a conversation, through whatever it is that the mind is doing to reenact or redirect your attention to that trauma over and over and over again. And that's what we talk about as process when we get curious about what happens to me every single time I get on a bike and I experience these sensations. Can I stay with these sensations? What is the conversation? What is it that I'm being told that I'm listening to? What are the beliefs? What are the assumptions, right? Who's here? How old am I? As mm-hmm. a way to deconstruct how I'm kept in that fear. And oftentimes, if we don't take care of the person that is afraid, right, that all of yeah. those emotions that are coming up, it's not possible to be able to disidentify enough to look at the process that's causing that experience. So have you done something like the two-handed recording exercise every time that fear arises, just to get in touch with the person who's having that experience, that traumatic experience?
Not while it's going on, no.
Yeah, that might be good.
While I'm on my bicycle?
No, just before you get on your bike. Or if are you saying that you have that experience of fear when you go past the?
Yeah. Yeah, but even when it passed the place, but also, I had to go to a big city, and I went by car. And there was an ambulance behind me, and I just mm-hmm. totally have to keep myself. I'm driving, so I don't mm-hmm. have earbuds in because otherwise I don't hear the traffic. Mm-hmm. And all I do to myself is say out loud to myself, "It's okay, Esther. Just go to the side. Just go to the side."
Yes.
But after the ambulance is gone, I am shaking like crazy, and it's
yeah, yeah. Yeah,
and
so at that point of time,
go ahead.
And so there's a way in which you're going up against that fear, right? Because you don't want that fear to shut you down and control you and make your life small. And so there's a way in which, despite the fear, you are living your life. And what it sounds like, I mean, I don't know if you've read the fear book, right? There's a way in which we move from that which is afraid to that which can support fear. And that's what you're doing when that ambulance is behind you. It's like, it's okay, Esther. It's okay. Just pull to the side is not coming from the person who's afraid. It's coming from the person who's supporting the person who's afraid. So there's a tiny bit of disidentification there. And then when you do pull over and if you can grab the recorder, get in touch with what's going on for you. You know, I'm shaking. This is what I'm hearing, and this is what I'm being told, and this is what I need. And, you know, some way of supporting the person who's going through that experience. Not from the perspective that it's going to be different or it'll change or anything else, but from that perspective of interest and curiosity, because, as you said, it's still here. It's still
yeah.
controlling your life, and you're
yeah.
interested in being free of it.
Yeah.
Not being free of your love and your loss necessarily, but being free about how that love is being used against you to control you in this way.
Yeah. I just find it, maybe that's conditioning, but I really don't know when to record if I'm in such a big city where so much is happening at the same time. It's like there are just too many impulses. So I know I have my recorder with me, but by the time I get to my appointment, I have to get into that building because otherwise I'll be late for the appointment, even though I take an extra hour mm-hmm. for myself, to give myself more time to like sit down, record, or listen to a recording, or take a little walk before I have to go into the building, all those things. And I'm struggling mm-hmm. with it. That's just how mm-hmm. it is right now.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I don't know if this works for you, but you could have a recording that you're listening to, but only put one earbud in. So there's that. So Sherry sometimes says that's an opportunity that as you drive, you know, it's all right, Esther. This is hard for you. I know it's hard for you. It's okay. Just breathe. Just breathe. You know, something yeah. that you don't want to be unsafe, and you want to be present and aware of your surroundings, and it's possible to introduce that other strain which can be held in the awareness and is reassuring. So don't try it in a big city. Try it at some place and practice with it before you have to see how you can support yourself in a larger context.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I can I'll do that. Yeah,
okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Esther.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks, Esther. And Ashwini, what was dropping in for me was the conversation at the monastery not too far back, where the question was about someone who was experiencing what seemed to be an open wound. And the answer was pretty much just how you described it, that condition. There has to be something that's keeping it open. And
yes.
So there is that conversation and conditioned mind, which is continually pointing out the trauma, kind of keeping mm-hmm. that, keeping the attention on that. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's move
lots
on.
Lots to unpack.
A lot to unpack in that, for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, here's our next caller. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, this is Carol. I got in the queue today because I thought it was the perfect time, because I was feeling guilty because I didn't do the assignment about guilt.
Yes, very appropriate.
Yeah.
So tell us about what that is like and what you
Well, it's kind of passed a bit, but it was you know, the beatings. Oh, I didn't do it, and I should have done it. And then there's that whole litany of, oh, you're not practicing very well, you know, you're just what ego's saying about going downhill in terms of practice, which is totally wrong, of course. But I see that when it's happening, it's so I'm listening to the program, and then I'm hearing all the things that ego is saying, and so it's distracting me from, you know, participating or from being with what's going on. And,
right.
And another message that I got was, so even now it's happening that I'm doing it wrong. And one of the messages was, you didn't do the assignment, and you feel guilty about that, so you can't participate, you know. So
yes. Yeah.
And so that's one reason why I got in the queue and didn't take myself out of the queue.
Yes. Well, wonderful, right, Carol? Because that's really what practice is training us to do. It's okay. It's telling me all the ways I don't participate in practice, and so and it's telling me that I shouldn't participate because of what I did in not participating before. So I should stay at home and feel bad. And instead,
yeah.
we recognize that conversation, we recognize the attempt to make us feel bad, and we just go on right on participating. It's
right.
the best the antidote to guilt is exactly that, it's participation, right? I'm not going to stop you from, I'm not going to be stopped from engaging in my life and being alive and joyful with how it is in this moment, in order to feel bad about something I didn't do or I'm going to do in the future moment.
Right, right. So, yeah,
yeah.
So that's a great step. And what to focus on is getting in the queue and participating, no matter, you know, what the nonsense that I'm hearing from ego.
That's right.
So
that's your experience of how well you participate. Because really, we want to bring awareness to our goodness and generosity and the beauty of life and our participation. It's that exercise we do in recording and listening about, you know, I know conditioning lies when it says, ha, 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 what I know is true is. And what you know is true is, despite what it says, you continue to participate and you continue to practice. That is your experience, which is true, rather than the belief, which is false and exactly the opposite of what it is that life is and what we are, right? It's a way of almost asserting or embodying what is so, rather than having the attention be on what is not so.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
Yes. And it's so liberating.
It is. And sometimes when I get caught up in listening to ego, it's like I can switch my attention by saying, okay, what is actually happening in the moment? You know, look at the trees or the flowers or whatever that, you know, and I'm walking. This is what's happening. Mm-hmm. Not all the voices in my head. So,
yes. Yeah. Which is another important point that I think Karen made also, that the story about guilt is what you did not do before, rather than what you're doing now. Right. It's a way, it's an attempt to deflect the attention from the moment. And in the moment, I mean, I read somewhere about, have you ever seen a tree that's neurotic? You know? Or a flower that's anxious? No, because they're all here, right? There's just it's just an interesting experience of how so much of guilt and shame and anxiety are based on listening to a conversation about something that's not happening in the moment.
I know, it's quite bizarre.
It is bizarre. It's truly bizarre when we look at it. And then we have to have the practice and the training and the skill for that not to be real and destroy us, right?
Right. Yeah, I love what people were talking about earlier about developing the skill rather than listening to the ego story about not having done something. You know, kind of with kindness, you know, okay, develop the skill with kindness and see the opportunity for, you know, developing the skill.
Yes, exactly, exactly. So I'm listening to a voice that's unkind. My focus of attention is on kindness. I'm listening to something that says I was unskillful. Okay, great, I'm not listening to that. Let me open to how I might master that skill. Oh, it's telling me I'm unfit. Let me go work out how to be fit, right?
Thank you.
Thank you, Carol.
Talk to you again
soon. Enjoy the trees. Yes.
I'm going to go look at some socks and some trees today for sure.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chris. Right. Thank you, Ashley.
Thanks, Carol.
Thank you.
And, Shwini, that brings us to the end of another wonderful show. And let's see. The assignment for today. When do you presently experience embarrassment? How old do you feel? Record and listen.
All right.
Very good.
We'll find out more about that tomorrow. Take care, Chris.
Indeed. All right. Go happy.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, everyone.